Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning, everyone. Great to have you with us. Welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Yeah, still plenty of a crime to fight out there?
There's no shortage of allegations of crime.
Okay. Well, this is interesting because today we're going to take about a look at how lawyers are regulated.
Yes.
We'll put you guys in the hot seat.
That's right. The first thing to know is that there's an organization in British Columbia called the Law Society, and that's the organization which is responsible for, amongst other things, regulating lawyers. And it can be contrasted with another organization you'll see in the media from time to time, which is the Canadian Bar Association.
Right.
And that's also an association of lawyers. But the task of the Canadian Bar Association is to, amongst other things, act as an advocate for the legal profession and as an advocate on issues that are important to lawyers. So the Canadian Bar Association is the advocacy lawyers group. They also do things like legal education, things of that sort, whereas the Law Society would be the organization that's in charge of things like determining who can be a lawyer, what are the requirements if you wish to be a lawyer or practice law, and then it deals with other things that are more problematic. How does it deal with problems? If lawyers aren't following the rules created by the Law Society, how does it respond to that?
They're busy because I often will get releases from the Law Society and somebody, a lawyer, has stepped out of line as disbarring the term. You know, like some pretty serious allegations that have been investigated. It seems that they keep a very watchful eye on how lawyers operate. Would that be correct?
I think that is a fair comment. The Law Society, it's sort of what it has to do, or set out in a provincial act, a Legal Profession Act, and it that sets out what the goal or objects of the Law Society are. The central goal or central principle is that the Law Society needs to act in the public interest. So the Law Society isn't acting in what it does to help lawyers. It's acting in order to uphold and protect the public interest in the administration of justice.
So how would someone go, is it something that the public can access? If you have a complaint about a lawyer, you approach the Law Society?
That's exactly right. So if a member of the public had a complaint about the conduct of a lawyer, they could contact the Law Society or go to their webpage, and they could file that complaint. And the Law Society then has a process, staff process, that would investigate the complaint to sort out whether it's something the Law Society can assist with. And then there are a range of possible ways that the Law Society could respond, everything from sort of, you know, a letter to the person trying to correct whatever the issue is, all the way up in the most serious cases to suspending or disbarring the lawyer if there is very serious misconduct.
What are some of the things that people complain to the Law Society about that lawyers allegedly do? Not everybody, but certain, you know, what are you hearing?
Well, there would be a whole range of things, everything from, and you should remember that lawyers are subject to, in addition to the ordinary legal requirements that a member of the public would have, the Law Society also has a thing which is called the Code of Professional Conduct for British Columbia. And that's sets out ethical requirements for lawyers, sort of how they're required to act in terms of acting with integrity, competence, honesty, what lawyers' obligations are to clients, to the court, to one another, this sort of thing. So the standard of conduct that lawyers are held to is high and appropriately high. So the Law Society would deal with all manner of complaints, everything from the most serious sort of dishonesty to complaints that would be things like whether a lawyer is responding promptly, acting with courtesy, acting with required sort of skill and so forth in the area in which they're practicing. And that's also why the range of responses that the Law Society would have is broad. Everything from things like a letter to somebody or conduct reviews, sort of additional training or advice to the lawyer about how they should handle something in the future, up to cases where punishment is required, where the lawyer could be fined or suspended or disbarred if you had somebody who was unethical or dishonest, something which is very serious.
CFAX listeners, if you've got a question about lawyers, now's your chance. 250-386-1161, star 1070 on your cell phone. You can email us, talk@cfax1070.com. You can also find us on Facebook. It sounds like some of this would be difficult to prove. Dishonesty, unethical. I mean, how do we determine what is ethical and unethical when it comes? It seems to be a gray area.
Well, we have, and certainly in ordinary life, many ethical issues are that. You know, different people would have different views as to what's ethical and not. In a professional context, though, the Law Society has actually created a code of professional conduct, which has canons of legal ethics that are particularly applicable to lawyers. And it would have requirements there about things like competence, honesty, acting with integrity, making sure you've got proper knowledge about the area you're practicing in. It would have a host of requirements that would go well beyond what sort of an ordinary life we might consider to be ethical conduct. The other thing to know is that the Law Society tries to start early. If you want to become a lawyer in British Columbia, you've got to do a number of things. You've got to go and get yourself a law degree from an accredited law school. Ordinarily, that's going to require you to go and do another undergraduate degree beforehand, before you go do the law degree. And when that's all done, you would ordinarily then be required to spend a year going through an articling admissions program. And that involves the former law student working with an experienced lawyer for the better part of a year to get sort of training and practical guidance on the practice of law. And then you need to go through a course that the Law Society puts on and write exams. And you have to do all of that before somebody's allowed to start.
So you know if you're doing something wrong because you have gone through several tiers of education, including a Law Society course before practicing law.
Yes.
Let's bring Doug in. Hi, Doug. You're on CFAX.
Oh, hey there. I only caught that part of this. Can you tell me what your topic was? Was it about the Law Society?
Yeah, we're talking about the Law Society and the regulation of lawyers.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that what your speaker is suggesting is the way things are supposed to be, and they're not reality at all. And I noticed that when I went to college. They always teach you how things work, but realistically, the world doesn't work the way you learn this stuff. Bottom line is the Law Society doesn't do any of those things. And a lawyer's told me straight out that lawyers really never get punished by the Law Society. If anything, they're really there to help the lawyer more than the actual person. I've actually put a complaint in, and it got to the point where they wouldn't even accept my phone calls. They wouldn't do anything about it. And it's very, very frustrating. And in the end, the lawyer was right. They really don't help the person. They really kind of protect the lawyers. They never really do anything but slap the lawyers on the wrist.
Hang on the line there. Let's get Michael Mulligan's opinion on your opinion.
Sure. Well, that simply not borne out by the statistics. You can go to the Law Society website. They're required to be transparent in terms of what they do. You can go there and you can actually look at the number of people that made complaints, what the sort of complaints were, and then you can look at how the Law Society responded to them, including the individual disciplinary decisions. So you can go there, read about the lawyer, read about the decision, and see what the consequence was. They've also, the other thing they've done to try and ensure that there isn't a perception that lawyers are somehow protecting themselves, in addition to the transparency that I've just talked about, they also have on disciplinary panels and as appointed benchers people who are not lawyers. So you would have people sitting on these things, you know, somebody who would be a well-respected person in the community but not a lawyer, maybe a doctor or an engineer or somebody else. They would also sit on the disciplinary panels. So you can actually go there and read about what they've done, and it's simply not the case that they don't respond to things.
Doug, do you think you want to, based on that, give it another crack?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? I've actually done that. I've gone to the law library at the courthouse, and I've searched and researched that stuff. This is quite a few years, I must say, and what I saw was hardly anything. Old case maybe way back in the day where somebody did something very, very serious, that mentioned, but everything else was so minor. So there wasn't anything that was ever serious that I ever saw. And I did do that research because I was quite frustrated, and my lawyer got away with it, what she did. And I was told straight out by lawyers, you know, I've talked to a lot of them. In the end, they really don't do anything, and they're not going to.
Thanks, Doug. Thank you for your opinion. Obviously, differing opinions here, and we accept those at CFAX 1070. We're going to take a break. Henriette, your call is up next. We're with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Stay with us.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. When it rains, it pours. Or will it? We get it right with an accurate, up-to-the-minute forecast. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
How many calls do I have to make just to find a reliable contractor to renovate my kitchen?
Have you tried EasyJobQuote.com?
Easy what?
EasyJobQuote.com. Call them to have an experienced estimator meet with you and go over what you need done. They submit your reno to qualified contractors who bid on your job and choose the bid that suits you. You can write your own review when the job is done, giving you a voice in the market.
Finding a contractor is stressful. We can help. Save time and have less frustration on your next renovation. EasyJobQuote.com.
It's here, a new beginning for Volvo, a new idea of what luxury can be. The 2016 Volvo XC60, ready with all-wheel drive, is the perfect car for drivers in search of adventure around town and beyond it. Test drive the 2016 XC60 at the new and improved Jim Pattison Volvo of Victoria on Douglas at Hillside, or visit them online at jpvolvoofvictoria.com. And make sure to like them on Facebook for your chance at exclusive monthly contests and giveaways.
The hand connects to the lump. The lump connects to the mammographer, who connects to the genetic counselor, who connects to the pharmacist. The pharmacist connects to the radiation therapist, who connects to the recovery and to regular preventative screenings with the mammographer. Health science professionals, connecting us all to better healthcare. Brought to you by Health Sciences Association of BC, the union delivering modern healthcare.
A shared passion for power, performance, and innovative techniques? That's Integrity Sales in Husqvarna. As a Husqvarna dealer, Integrity Sales carries all Husqvarna power equipment. From brush cutters, weed eaters, chainsaws, lawnmowers, lawn tractors, to a full line of parts and accessories. Count on Integrity Sales to keep you working efficiently with the power of Husqvarna. Integrity Sales, your Greater Victoria authorized Husqvarna dealer. 2180 Keating Cross Road, where the professionals shop.
What can a licensed professional from Houle Electric do for your home or business? Upgrades, adds, moves, changes of panels, sockets, rewiring, testing, troubleshooting, preventative maintenance, repairs, inspection, renovation, and much more. All Houle Electric technicians are licensed professionals. They're constantly upgrading and they're bonded, so you can feel comfortable with them in your home. Find Houle on Facebook, Twitter, and at www.houle.ca.
Ooh, electric, that's Houle.
What's wrong, Jimmy?
Grandpa, I'm looking for a mortgage, but I'm in over my head.
I'll tell you the same thing I told your dad years ago. Use a mortgage broker through Great Pacific Mortgage. They can find you interest rates like no one else in Victoria. They're perfect for experienced borrowers like me and for inexperienced borrowers like...
Like me?
Yes, Jimmy. Like you.
Great Pacific Mortgage and Investments, your experienced mortgage experts.
A trip down memory lane. Boomertown with Barry Bowman. Sundays at 3 on CFAX 1070. When you need to make sense of it, it's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Legally Speaking. Thanks so much for listening to CFAX 1070. I'm with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. We're talking about the Law Society and the regulation of lawyers. To the phones as promised. Hi, Henriette. Thanks for waiting. You're on CFAX.
Thank you. I'd like to agree with the previous caller and take one step further and say that the judges are also protecting crooked lawyers.
Oh, wow. Any personal experience in that? Or
yes. Okay. And both counts. The Law Society, as far as I'm concerned, is totally useless.
Did you go to the Law Society
concerns? Yes. I know that there was discipline taken, but no response given back to me to assure me.
Let's put this to Michael Mulligan. Where would Henriette have been able to find out if there were disciplinary action taken?
Anyone can find that out. If you simply go to the Law Society webpage, you can go to the disciplinary part, type in the name of the lawyer, and you can see if the person's been disciplined. You can also go and look at all of the decisions where there's a disciplinary decision. Reasons are given for it. And they also set out on their webpage all of the statistics about the number of lawyers who are reprimanded, disbarred, this sort of thing. So you can go and look at it. Now, the Law Society doesn't have, and one of the challenges perhaps for people is that the Law Society doesn't have jurisdiction to deal with all manner of disappointments with, legal cases and so forth. Some things are beyond their scope. They deal with the regulation of lawyers. If a person had a complaint about the outcome of their case or other things they might find unsatisfactory, they may be beyond the Law Society's jurisdiction. One thing to remember that's important, this caller mentioned judges. And in some jurisdictions, in the U.S., for example, they have the way lawyers are regulated is by the court in that state. So it would be for judges to be disciplining lawyers if they behaved inappropriately. That's not how it works in British Columbia. And we're fortunate that that isn't how it works. Lawyers are what's called a self-governing profession. So subject to the Legal Profession Act, lawyers are responsible for governing themselves, although there are appointed benchers who are members of the public that would be involved that aren't lawyers, and that's important. But the reason why it's so significant that lawyers are independent is when you hire a lawyer and they're acting for you, within their legal and ethical constraints, you would hope that the lawyer is going to be acting in a way that isn't primarily concerned with currying favor with the court or being concerned with, government regulating lawyers if they didn't like, the cases they were taking on or the arguments they were making. So it's important for the legal profession that it be independent so that you know the lawyer who you've hired is within legal and ethical constraints acting without fear of the, displeasing the court if they were the regulator or displeasing the government if they were the regulator, because so often you'd have, for example, the government on the other side of a file. So that's why it's important that there be independence there.
Who oversees the Law Society?
Well, the way the Law Society works, it's governed by a group of people that are called benchers. They are the majority of them is elected by our elected lawyers. But there are also five
benchers. So it's lawyers overseeing lawyers.
That's right. But there are five benchers who are appointed by the government that are non-lawyers. And on disciplinary panels, the Law Society also ensures that there are non-lawyers on them so that people can be satisfied that, look, it's not just sort of an insular group of people. And importantly, the decisions are public and you can go and read them. Also, they should be, if done properly, should be informing the person who was the complainant in a case of the outcome. And I can't speak to this caller and why that wasn't done there. But if she didn't receive it, she can simply go to the Law Society webpage, punch in the lawyer's name, and see what happened.
How often do lawyers get reprimanded or there are some consequences for dishonesty and unethical behavior?
Happily, those things aren't common. There isn't... In order to be called and become a lawyer, you need to have satisfied the Law Society that you're somebody of good character and had all the training that I've referred to.
But if it's dishonesty and unethical behavior, isn't that just simply harder to prove by the Law Society?
Well, unlike in a criminal case where a person could remain silent and not have to answer things, that doesn't apply with a Law Society complaint. If there's a complaint against a lawyer, the lawyer is required to respond to it, turn over all of the relevant material, explain themselves, come to a hearing. The Law Society can conduct searches, require the person to explain what they've done. So it's not like a criminal case where you've got to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt and somebody's remaining silent. It's a matter of you show up and explain yourself, and if you don't do that, you're in trouble for your failure to explain yourself and show up.
kind of tough for an average citizen going up against a lawyer, though, who, you know what I mean, in terms of that, making a case against a lawyer who's adept at fighting such allegations.
Well, and that's also why it's important we have the Law Society. A person doesn't have to do that on their own. They can simply go to the Law Society webpage. They could fill out a form with what their complaint is. And then there are staff at the Law Society, and their task would be to investigate that and sort out whether it requires further disciplinary action or further training or some response to explain to the person what it is. So a person doesn't have to pay for it. They don't need to hire a lawyer to do it. They can simply go there, file their complaint, and it's the Law Society's task to investigate that and take whatever action is appropriate, and then to explain what they've done so people can see it and judge for themselves whether that was done appropriately.
And it doesn't have to be at a level of sophistication. People can simply send in a paragraph or so of what has transpired?
Yes, there's an online form. You'd put in your name and the person you have a concern about and what the complaint is and send that off.
Hi, Judy, you're on CFAQs, last caller for this show.
Hi, I agree with all the other people about the disciplinary action with the lawyers. It took me 3 times to have a lawyer disciplined, and a total discipline was a slap on the hand, which doesn't even begin to meet the damage that was done by him.
Sorry to hear that. Michael, we're hearing from some disgruntled people here saying the Law Society is not doing them justice.
Well, you're not going to, as they say, sort of make all the people happy all the time. But if you look at the statistics on the Law Society webpage, you'll see that they do take complaints seriously. They investigate them. They explain what they're doing, and they put all of that information there for people to see. So there's no secrets about what they're doing or how they're doing it.
Do you have those stats then as to how many people make a complaint to the Law Society, and how many are actually acted on? I mean, not acted on, but there is disciplinary action attributed to. I know I just threw that out to you. You may not have that in front of you, but
yeah, the detailed information is on the Law Society webpage. They have on there. I'm looking at their annual report from 2014. They try to break down the categories of what people have called about or made some complaint about. And then they set out how each of those was resolved depending on the nature of the complaint, be them resolved, withdrawn, no further action, disciplinary action, this sort of thing. And then it has categories of what sort of discipline were imposed. The most serious category of discipline set out in 2014, there were 3 lawyers who were disbarred as a result of their conduct. There were 5 lawyers who were suspended as a result of their conduct. 2 of the complaints that went to this stage were dismissed by the hearing panel. Fines were imposed in 7 cases and reprimands in 2. And then there are a whole series of less serious things where it was things like conduct reviews to make sure the person's following the correct procedure, has the right training, this sort of thing.
Well, we asked for the stats and you brought it. So I think that's good for people to know just how much disciplinary action has occurred, because I say I do get the news releases. But I can understand if people are upset, they've had a bad experience and feel that they're not being heard, because it can be pretty tough and pretty pricey. Love having you on the show, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you so much.
Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. You've been listening to Legally Speaking. Coming up next in news, we're getting more information about a bizarre event aboard a BC ferry last night. Stay with us.
Victoria's breaking news and talk that matters. CFAQs 1070.
Good morning. It's 11:30. I'm James Gardner. With CFAQs 1070 News, RCMP have a man in custody after someone deployed a life raft from a BC ferry vessel mid-voyage last night. The ship was going through Active Pass about halfway between Swartz Bay and Tsawwassen when passengers noticed a man deploying a life raft and then jumping overboard into it. The crew ordered all stop and rescue boats be deployed, but the man and the life raft were not found. A short time later, RCMP received a 911 call from nearby Galliano Island reporting a naked man had broken into a residence. The woman who lived in the home fled and called for help from a neighbor's home. The naked man then wandered off to a nearby resort and broke into one of the cabins there. Police officers descended on the scene along with a canine unit. A suspect was taken into custody and transported to hospital for assessment. RCMP will be recommending charges including break and enter and mischief. The new Liberal government will resurrect the mandatory long-form census, which was scrapped by the Conservatives, but it's not clear how many people will be persuaded to fill it out. But Innovation and Science Minister Navdeep Bains says today Canadians are reclaiming their right to accurate and more reliable information. Egypt is trying to do some damage control today amid increasing speculation that the Russian plane that crashed in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula on Saturday was brought down by a bomb. Egypt's tourism minister says Britain's decision to suspend all flights where the doomed flight originated is unjustified. CFAX 1070 News Time, 11:32.
My name is Tara, and I work for Sydney All Care Residents. People always ask me, what makes Sydney All Care different? For starters, we're all about care. We offer private rooms. We have our own on-site gourmet chef. We have 24-hour staff, and we always have fun. So what makes us different? At Sydney All Care Residents, we're all about care.
Sydney All Care Residents, privately offering respite, complex, and palliative care. Learn more at allcarecanada.ca.
CFAX 1070 weather now, brought to you by CTV News, Vancouver Island. A mix of sun and cloud this afternoon. Our high reaching 11, some increasing cloud tonight, chance of some overnight showers, and a low of 7. Tomorrow, periods of rain in the morning, windy in the afternoon, and a high of 11. Currently at the harbor, it is still cloudy, 11 degrees.
You have endless information coming at you, but can you depend on it? For the whole story and nothing but, trust in CTV Vancouver Island News at 6 with Andrew Johnson.
I'm James Gardner. Your next news at noon, breaking news when it happens on CFAX 1070. It's 11:33.
All season, CFAX 1070 is giving away trips to see the Canucks play live with the Lucky Canuck. Here's how.
Listen for the CFAX Lucky Canuck during each game. Then go to CFAX1070.com and enter that player's name. You could win tickets to an upcoming game, accommodations at the Rosedale on Robson, and fly round trip with Harbor Air Seaplanes. Plus, you have a chance to win a $50 gift card instantly from Glenwood Meats.
Win with the Lucky Canuck from Glenwood Meats, Harbor Air Seaplanes, and CFAX 1070. Now, Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us. Dave Teixeira, who's supposed to be here for Web Wednesday and Web Thursday, has had an emergency and has had a last-minute cancellation. So we wish him the very best with the situation that's unfolding for him. And we also say thank you to Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson, who's decided to stick around because we love having you on anyway. But there's so much to talk about right now, especially the appointment of the Justice and Attorney General of Canada, BC's Jody Wilson-Raybould. Your comments, your thoughts on the significance of this appointment.
Well, I think it's great. I must say, watching the swearing in of the new ministers the other day, I thought was simply fantastic. We've got somebody here who is a lawyer. She's a former Crown counsel who practiced for about 3 years down at the Main Street Courthouse in Vancouver. Before she did work, she was a regional chief. She was involved with the BC Treaty Commission. She's somebody who has a wealth of experience and I think will come at this job from a very important and new perspective. Over the past number of years, as somebody who practices criminal law, I would receive every, it seemed like a few weeks, but I think it was every few months, sort of updates to the criminal code and notices about them. So often the things which have been going on from a justice perspective over the past number of years have been depressing and counterproductive. We've had a number of changes made to the criminal code that have resulted in the increased rates of incarceration, disproportionate rates of incarceration for Aboriginal people, an approach to the justice system which has operated essentially sort of counter to evidence, which was, I think, one of the most, the other thing that made me smile watching the appointments the other day was appointing a minister for science. You sure wouldn't have seen that with the last government. So many of the things which have been going on have been decisions that have been made in terms of things like criminal justice policy have been decisions which are utterly in conflict with the advice that you would receive if you had somebody with any experience doing that work. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why the new justice minister, having the experience that she does, including doing prosecution work on the ground at the Main Street Courthouse in Vancouver, one of the busiest criminal courthouses in the province, will be so valuable, because you're going to have somebody who's actually done the work and actually has a sense of who is there and what things are likely to work and not work. Now, with all that being said, I think one of the things that flows from that are some very high expectations. And there are going to be a number of things on her agenda that are going to need to be dealt with promptly. And those will include things like dealing with the Supreme Court of Canada decision on the right to doctor-assisted suicide, striking down the legislation on that. That needs to be dealt with promptly if the government does want to regulate in that area. Dealing with the legalization of marijuana, that's a clear policy platform, and that's going to take some doing. So she's got big things to do.
Let's talk about the legalization of marijuana. What, I mean, it's stated in the Liberal platform before they were elected that they're pro-legalization. What would that process take, and is there a timeline that we can possibly be looking at?
Well, when you look at their platform, it is crystal clear. They are in favor of legalizing marijuana, but they also say they wish to regulate it, avoid it being provided to children, and provide for tougher regulation or penalties for people doing things like operating a vehicle while impaired by it or giving it to kids. So that's going to take some doing. But in my judgment, the effort that the criminal justice system puts into things like prosecuting people for possessing and smoking marijuana is not only is that wasteful, but it means that our limited resources aren't put to much better use. I would, as a member of the public, certainly rather have the police spending their time dealing with violent crime or other things which have an impact on others than spending time and resources chasing people around for smoking marijuana. The other effect of that is that with that particular substance, many of the problems that are legitimate problems that flow from marijuana in society are not problems caused by the drug or the use of the drug, but things that flow from the fact that it's illegal. Because marijuana is illegal, it then creates things like grow operations in rental houses. It creates gang activity. It creates proceeds of crime. It prompts home invasions. All of that because it has value because it's illegal. If the substance wasn't illegal, who's growing parsley in the basement of a rental house? No one. Who's engaging in a home invasion to kick the door in somebody's house with guns and masks in order to steal orchids from somebody's basement? We've got a host of problems associated with it, but problems of our own making. We've made the equivalent of Al Capone by criminalizing it, and in my judgment, prevented few people from using it. So the approach that the new government intends to take, to me, seems to make eminent sense. And I should say this, I started my career at the same courthouse not long before the current justice minister was there. And when I was there, I started doing part of that, I did some drug prosecution work there. And it didn't take too long, even with more serious drugs, to figure out that if somebody's using them and the risk of death isn't deterring you from continuing to use whatever you might be using, the risk of me sending you to jail for a period of time sure wasn't going to do it. So I'm confident that the new minister, having had the experience on the ground at that courthouse doing crown work, will be very valuable.
CFAX listeners, join our conversation. We've shifted now to talk about, well, lots of stuff, including marijuana, but that's under the appointment of Jody Wilson-Raybould from BC, Justice and Attorney General of Canada. Michael, as we speak, or at least today, Victoria City Council is trying to, two counselors putting forth a motion, rather, to urge council to write a letter to Prime Minister Trudeau asking if and when a new Liberal government intends to implement legalization and regulation of cannabis. Because, as you well know, the city of Victoria is embroiled in a situation of trying to license or at least set up a structure. And now they're caught in sort of a legal no man's land? Or what is your take?
Well, the current state of affairs here is a totally untenable one. We've got a circumstance where, generally speaking, the police don't bother investigating people for possessing or selling marijuana. It's just not one of their priorities. But it remains illegal. And the problem is that from time to time, people will get prosecuted for it. And the issue there is one of arbitrariness. It's like if you set the speed limit on the highway at 20 kilometers an hour and then just routinely ignore everyone driving down the road until you decide you're not going to do that and begin ticketing people. Mm. That's simply, the big term, just not fair. So the current state of affairs is unsatisfactory. It also, in my judgment, erodes respect for the rule of law. When you've got something which is illegal, which no one is choosing to enforce, that's generally going to undermine confidence in the rule of law.
So what do you do?
Well, I think you do what the current government or the new government is proposing, which is stop that. Stop wasting our time and resources prosecuting people for smoking marijuana in their basement. That's a waste of time. And don't leave a state of affairs in place where you've got a law on the books that in many parts of the country is ignored.
And what does Victoria do in the meantime, though? I mean, we've had three robberies, armed robberies, of three pot shops in 3 months.
Yeah, well.
So what are they supposed to do here is they wait and wonder.
That would be an example of the sort of the ancillary harm we cause by creating a value for a substance which would otherwise have little or no value. You're not seeing a lot of armed robberies of fruit stands in order to go in and steal their, you know, vegetables because they're simply not worth that much. You're getting a robbery of a pot shop because the pot has value, and it has value because it's illegal. If people were permitted to grow it in the greenhouse in the backyard of their house, who's bothering to rob a pot store?
Well,
it wouldn't be worth anything.
I agree, but in the meantime, in this gray area where it's the Wild West show, and I think that it's been put forth by Councillors Coleman and Alto that, you know, we should send this letter, find out when it intends to implement legalization and regulation of cannabis, and essentially wait until, I think it's, Marianne told me it was February, to see. But what do you say to people who live in neighborhoods where these robberies are happening and all the rest of it? I mean, should the municipality move in advance of knowing where the Trudeau government's going to go or their timeline?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, the media reports today, we were chatting with this, chatting about this earlier. Apparently, the ministers are all walking around in Parliament happily answering questions from reporters, which is another bit of a breath of fresh air. So they may not send a letter. If I would be surprised if somebody doesn't walk up to the new Minister of Justice and say, when are you planning to do this? And it seems to be clear they're doing it. The challenge for the new government is going to be the large number of things that they have to do. You've got these big expectations, lots to do, and a short time to do it. They're apparently recalling Parliament at the beginning of December, and they're going to get started. I was joking the other day about how they can manage to deal with all of these things quickly, and sort of came to mind the omnibus bill of the Conservative Party. Just jam everything in one piece of legislation along with the budget and see if it passes, but obviously that's not on.
Those days are gone?
Those days are gone. And there does need to be a bit of caution about how this is done. And we also happily now have the experience of looking at Washington State, Colorado, Alaska, a whole bunch of U.S. states which have permitted marijuana to be sold legally, to look at what they've done there and what their experience is.
I know that Colorado is experiencing a bonanza. Forbes magazine is reporting that now the tax revenue from the sale of marijuana has surpassed that of alcohol.
Yes. I mean, that's...
we're not, you know, saying, hey, great, everyone go out and get high so we can get tax money off of it. But it's just a reality. It's something to look at.
And there's also the history in BC with respect to alcohol and our failed effort at prohibition many years ago here. That's why we still have, by the way, the liquor distribution branch and a bunch of government outfits selling liquor, I'm sure visitors from other places are to look at and scratching their head about, why do you have the government selling alcohol at stores? That
doesn't
make much
sense. Just the
very
name, the liquor distribution branch, sounds...
Well, it may be the liquor and marijuana distribution branch before long. And once that took hold here, once the prohibition ended and the government started selling, originally they were selling prescription alcohol to people. People had to go to their doctor during prohibition here and get a prescription for alcohol to deal with their nervous tension, and then take that to a government dispensary who would issue it to you. And it then became such a source of revenue. That's why we still have it. So I'm sure we'll get. I'm sure we'll become accustomed to a bunch of money coming in from that source.
Let's bring John into the conversation. Good morning, John. You're on CFAX. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. I just want to clarify one thing: difference between legalizing and regulating. If you think parsley is a non-controlled thing, that's fine. But if you're going to control that other thing as marijuana, you got a whole different thing of apples and oranges. Nobody wants to control parsley. Nobody wants to raise tax funds off parsley. But if you don't think we waste time on regulation of tobacco because we regulate it, if we regulate marijuana, you're going to have the same problem. In fact, maybe more enforcement, because the government makes more money from it. Enforcement's not going away unless you legalize it. I can leave you the comment.
Thanks, Michael. Or sorry, John. Michael, your response.
I think that's a very valid point. And there'll be issues that the government will need to deal with, things like, what degree of tax revenue are you imposing, this sort of thing. With cigarettes, that's been an issue. When taxes get too high, then you have people that are trying to smuggle them in from the U.S. and other places. But the degree of time and effort and the way in which we regulate things like alcohol or tobacco, both things which are regulated, or other food products, we regulate them, we've got to package them, make sure they're clean, tell people what they're going to be, this sort of thing. All of that certainly does take some time and effort, but you don't have the police sweeping in with the SWAT team into the basement of the rental house in order to recover the tobacco plants that people are trying to grow in their basement to roll their own cigarettes. So it's all a matter of degree and how we're doing it. And we need to do it with some care. And yes, some effort will need to be made to, ensure people are, if they're selling it, it is what it says it is. And, perhaps we shouldn't be selling it to children with cigarettes. But we don't generally have the sort of criminal activity, break-ins or ruined houses, criminal gangs and proceeds of crime and all the things that flow from our current approach to it. We can do our best to stop selling, cigarettes to kids without employing the SWAT team routinely.
We're talking to Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson, an expanded version of Legally Speaking. We're going to take a break. We're taking more calls right after this. Stay with us.
Email talk at CFAX1070.com. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. From the CFAX 1070 Community Cruiser, here's what's happening.
Here's how you can support the Victoria Youth Empowerment Society. Choose a handcrafted bowl and use it to dine on delicious soup at the Super Bowls of Hope, Tuesday, November 10th at the Inn at Laurel Point. And you can join Wild Art for an elegant evening of great food, a silent auction, and fun at the Fall for Wildlife Dinner Auction at the Four Points by Sheraton Victoria Getaway. That happens on Saturday, November 14th.
CFAX 1070.
Thinking about winter driving makes you want to ignore this. Since driving on icy roads requires lots of this.
Attention!
But if you take advantage of Mitsubishi's Yokohama Winter Tire Package, you'll actually want to do this. Even when it's doing this. Because your tires will grip like this. That was Velcro. Get to know Mitsubishi with a no-charge winter tire package worth up to $1,400, including tires, wheels, installation, mounting, and balancing. You'll be ready for whatever winter throws at you. Mitsubishi. Built better. Backed better. On the purchase of select vehicles. Offer ends soon. For details, visit MitsubishiMotors.ca.
Are you a shopping addict?
A hamburger connoisseur?
Golf aficionado?
If you answered yes or just love screaming hot deals and discounts at your favorite hangouts, you gotta download the Get in the Loop app on your smartphone. The Get in the Loop app will also get you deals on golfing, spa visits, shopping, and more. It's easy. No coupon printing or pre-purchasing required. And brand new to Get in the Loop is deals on vision care. Spend less while experiencing more with CFAX 1070 and the Get in the Loop app, available on the App Store. You'll love it.
I don't work within the same rules as traditional law enforcement.
Sharon Stone is vice president.
Shut the front door.
With a lethal weapon she didn't know existed.
What exactly have I found?
The greatest secret in the history of our country.
This fall on Bravo.
John Case at your service, Madam Vice President.
No kidding?
No kidding.
The secret is out.
Impressive.
Sharon Stone stars in Agent X. Premieres Tuesday at 7, only on Bravo.
Debbie, what is going on with your phone?
Oh, just another useless notification from my husband's install-it-yourself alarm system. It's been nothing but problems.
Really?
It's just bells and whistles. I don't actually feel any safer at home. It's like we're always on call.
You know, you should call Alarm Force. They sent someone to install my alarm system, and it's professionally monitored.
Leave it to the professionals when it comes to protecting your home.
Call 1-800-267-2001. Alarm Force.
Even though London Drugs is turning 70, we feel younger than we are. We're still bright-eyed and passionate about helping customers like you find what you need so that life can be as smooth as 40s jazz. And unlike my voice, we never crack under pressure. 70 years of helping Canadians. We take care of that at London Drugs. Shop our 70th anniversary deals in-store or online from November 6th to 11th. Enter for a chance to win a $700 London Drugs gift card. One prize per store. See in-store for details.
Hi, this is Daryl.
And I'm Tom from Murphy Wallbeds.
You know, it seems like everyone needs more room these days, but with the cost of renovations in real estate, it seems next to impossible to get it.
Need a home office, guest room, storage, or TV room? With Murphy Wallbeds, you can have it.
Let us show you how our innovative designs and products can let one room do it all at a fraction of the price.
Come and see what we have in store for you at Murphy Wallbeds of Victoria, 3075 Douglas Street. Building quality living solutions into Victoria homes for over 25 years.
News alerts on the go. Follow us on Twitter. Victoria's breaking news and talk that matters. CFAX 1070. The biggest news events, the stories in our community. Understood. It's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back, everybody, to an expanded version of Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. We've been talking about the appointment of Jody Wilson-Raybould of BC, Justice and Attorney General of Canada, and then the conversation went to pot, really, the potential what's going to happen with legalizing marijuana and getting Michael Mulligan's take on it. Gord sends us this email. Your Legally Speaking guest ignores two major concerns with the legalization of marijuana. One, society's worst problem with impairment is from a current legal product, alcohol. Number two, tobacco is legal, but there is a huge black market business in illegal tobacco sales. Why will legalization of marijuana have different and much more positive results than for alcohol and tobacco?
Well, I guess I would say this. I don't think any of those things are things I would recommend anyone to be using. So that's certainly not my view. With respect to tobacco, there's a legitimate issue about what level of taxation can you impose before you, or alcohol for that matter, before people are trying to, make gin in their bathtub and sneak cigarettes in from the United States. So there is a threshold, and that's one of the things to be sorted out, right? I think these are products which we should be taxing. They're not good for people. So if you've got to raise taxes somehow, this seems like a great place to do it. But you want to impose a level of taxation which isn't so high that you then recreate the problem you had before. Although I expect even if you got that balance slightly wrong, you're still not seeing, when you look around, a lot of home invasions for people to steal your cigarettes. And you're not seeing a lot of liquor stores robbed by gangs of armed men trying to steal the beer and, wine. We just don't have that. That's an issue, and I think that's going to be the sort of regulatory issue that's going to need to get sorted out, figuring out what the appropriate tax level is. And then there are other things that they're going to need to do, make sure these products are properly labeled, make sure that they are what they say they are. You'll need to make sure that their regulations, making decisions about, how they're going to be dispensed. Is it going to be at the government liquor and marijuana store, or will it be at the corner wine and marijuana store? What exactly is going to go on there? But the critical thing is get away from what we're doing now, which is just so wasteful in terms of judicial, court, police, and other resources. and causes such disproportionate harm to people. I mean, if you wind up with a conviction for the simple possession of marijuana, the bottom line is you're not going to the United States again, which has big implications for people.
Well, it's still illegal federally, despite what the what four states now have done.
That's true, and the border people aren't going to care about that. So if you have that pot conviction from 1968 and you decide to take your grandchildren to Disneyland, you may find yourself standing in an embarrassing fashion at the Seattle airport being told you're not going anywhere.
Imagine the future of Victoria. The BC Lottery Corporation wants to have a casino built close to downtown Victoria. Marijuana's legalized. You get the big yachts coming in. And maybe the casino where the sewage treatment plant was going to go at the entrance to, you know, off of Squamall. I mean, this the changes with this. And if marijuana were to be legal, mind you, you can't smoke cigarettes in casinos, I don't think, anyway.
No, that's right. It's sort of, you know, what are people going to give up and quit when they get sick if you're allowing everyone to do these things in advance? But, you know, generally the criminal law should be concerned with doing things that are harmful to other people, not doing things which we might have find morally repugnant.
Thank you so much for sticking around. It's been really fascinating, and I appreciate it. And you're very bright, but you also make me giggle. So thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Michael Mulligan of Mulligan.